This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access our shows live or as podcasts by going online to KUCI.org. This is In the Garden, a show produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm DC Morgan, along with my partner, Ann Liu, and we will be your hosts this morning on KUCI Radio for the hour. This week's topic is building healthy soils. And our guest today is Giselle Schoenegger, who is the manager of organic gardening education for Kellogg Supply Incorporated. Welcome, Giselle.
Thank you so much. Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
We're so happy to have you. Can you tell us some background on the Kelloggs?
You know, they are an extraordinary family with great legacy. And there were three brothers, Joseph, Daniel, and Samuel. They came to America from England in 1671, and they were assigned the surname Kilnlog. And that was in reference to the family occupation of preparing wood logs in kilns. So that's how they got the name Kellogg. So once in America, the three brothers took separate paths. One of them settled in Battle Creek, Michigan, and started the Kellogg Cereal Company. And this is kind of a neat piece. We get asked all the time, are you the cereal company? No, you don't add milk with our product. You add water. Another one of Joseph's descendants settled in the Midwest, where his family lived for eight generations. And the other one came across the country and settled in California. And that's who we are. We're the composting company. I work for just an exceptional family business. The siblings, Kathy Kellogg and Hap Kellogg, are running the company. And their mother just died about 3 years ago. And we all lost her when she died. And their father died about 33 years ago. So these two have been really running this company that was started in 1925. You know, we are certified organic. And that's a very interesting conversation today. Because in order to be certified organic through OMRI, the Organic Material Review Institute.
That's O-M-R-I.
That's right. That's what you'll see on the packaging often.
Yes.
We're actually dual certified. That's a national nonprofit organization that verifies we're in compliance with the organic standards. The other one is CDFA, California Department of Food and Ag. So we have this national organic program. That's what it's called, the NOP. And there are standards that were developed that took over 10 years to develop. And we have to abide by the same standards that a grower has to abide by.
So in the show, you're going to be telling us how using these organic products help build healthy soil.
That's right. Absolutely.
And that's the topic of today's show.
I thought we might start with some fertilizer topic here. I like what our Master Gardener Handbook states, that the successful gardener fertilizes adequately but not excessively. And many people think that if this is good, then more is going to be even better. And
I know. Stop right there, DC. How is it harmful to be excessive in our fertilizers?
So a lot of the synthetics that we're using today are soluble, right? So let's just say it's a 30-30-30 NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. And remember, this is a chemical conversation right now. You know, and if it's organic or synthetic, it still falls into the chemical chart. But what I'm talking about when I talk about chemicals, it's really synthetic materials. They're formulated, they're petroleum-based, salt-based. They dissolve very fast, so plants only use 10 to 15% of that nutrient. What happens to the rest of it? It washes out through the soil, ends up in our waterways. Plus, the plant is overconsumptive with nitrogen when it's synthetic. So it pushes the plant to grow, it stretches and elongates it, making the cell structure thin, allowing more insect and disease attack on that plant. Plus, the synthetic washes through the soil, killing off beneficial living organisms. They call it osmotic shock, okay? It's like force feeding a plant. It's fast food for plants. Whereas the organics, when you look at an organic and you'll see a 555 NPK, let's just say, or kelp, let's say, as a single ingredient item is 0.6, 0.5, 2.5. Just because the numbers are low does not mean it's not effective, because it is a different system. Synthetics are called plant food. They don't have to go through the biological process. They dissolve, plant drinks up what it can, rest goes down through the soil. We are not just organic. We are a biological system. We are about feeding life in the soil the way Mother Nature intended. Those organisms break down those the plant structures, you know, anything decomposing. They break it down by secreting enzymes, and then they feed the plant. It's really like feeding in parts per million versus a 30-30-30 NPK, if that makes sense.
That philosophy sounds really, really current.
Yes.
And fits in the direction we want to go in preserving Mother Earth and our natural resources. Has Kellogg always been that way?
So it's not only is it current, but it's ancient. This is how we started. We're just going back to the way Mother Nature intended before we took a detour in the 40s with synthetics. And this is not to knock some of the things that science has brought us, but what we are learning is that we are also doing tremendous damage in the system with synthetics that we've been focusing on. And what we're trying to do is go back to the way Mother Nature intended. And, you know, and to answer the other half of your question is, yes, Kellogg has. This has been their focus is how do we take resources and recover them and compost them and get them back into the earth and make sure that clean, good organic matter doesn't end up in the landfill. This is called resource recovery. That's what the Kelloggs have been doing since 1925. That is still our focus today.
That is great news, because I know it's been about 10 years ago I was in Maui snorkeling, and a lot of the sea turtles had big tumors on them.
Oh, yes.
And we were told that all the fertilizers were running down off the golf courses, and they figured out that was what it was. And we were just shocked, but they've changed their ways since then, but that was one of the side effects.
You know, I think it's so important for us as individuals, as families, as consumers, to really look beyond the first thing that you see when you're in a garden shop and ask the questions. Find out what is more sustainable. What is really the healthiest choice for you and your kids? I mean, if you're using a weed and feed on your lawn, synthetic, and your kids are out playing and they walk into the house, they're bringing all that into the house. And really it is it's far more toxic. And I will tell you this, gardening with organic practices is so much more enjoyable. The rewards are greater. You feel like you're not only taking care of yourself, because we're a garden too, right? How we care for ourselves as a garden will reflect in how we care for the garden and the soil, and vice versa. If you care for your garden in a healthy way, it impacts how you look at other things, other garden, other materials that you use in your home. You talked about the biology, like in our gut biology. We know that when we take an antibiotic, which means antibios means anti-life. So we hope it's going to kill whatever makes us sick. But we know that it strips us of our beneficial microflora. Like our health is tied to our gut, right? Our second brain.
Our second brain.
Yeah. And I mean, so when we take an antibiotic, we hope it's going to kill what's making us sick, but it also strips you of all of your microflora. So typically it's the women in our lives, right? It's our grandmothers, our mothers that say we need to eat, you know, kimchi in certain cultures. I'm German. We eat a lot of sauerkraut. We're seeing a lot of the fermented foods coming back now,
yes.
Right? And that is all about building that microflora back in your body. So the soil has the same system in place.
It's like a gut.
It is. So the biology, if you think of soil, that's the skin of the earth. I can't remember who quoted that saying. It's not original for me, but I love it. Think of the microorganisms in the soil as the digestive tract of the planet.
What a wonderful metaphor. I'm going to remember that when I'm working in the garden.
Yeah, it really does fit. I mean, this has been such a rewarding experience to really go back and help re-educate the nursery industry about 23 years ago. I've been on the road for 23 years. And really starting by helping to re-educate our industry, re-educate the homeowner, the landscape trade, that there are other options that are more sustainable. You know, today, the real word that we're using now in agriculture is restorative ag. How do we restore and reclaim what we've, how do we revitalize soil? Yeah, it's more than just about sustainability. It's how do we nurture and rebuild what we've kind of depleted? So, you know, fertilizers, when we think of fertilizers, our fertilizers are all infused with beneficial bacteria and mycorrhizae. So we're actually inoculating the soil with beneficial life instead of relying just on what someone might have as the biological profile in their soil, especially if they've been using synthetics. They have a limited life of biology in the soil. Because if you only grow, like for big ag, if you only grow one crop, monocrop, above ground, right? One crop. If you limit the diversity above the soil, you limit the biological diversity below the soil. That's one of the other issues with farming on such a large scale, is we've minimized the biology. In your home garden, if you add organic material into the soil every time you plant, you use organic fertility, whether it's granulated or liquid, and you mulch, you will build healthy colonies of biology in your garden.
Yes, and I understand the organic is wonderful, but gardeners have to be a little more patient because the organic takes a little bit longer to see results. Is that correct?
You know, that used to be what the thinking until we infused the fertilizers with the biology. So when you inoculate fertilizer with the bacteria and the fungi, when you mix it in the soil and there's warmth and moisture, they break dormancy and they go to work eating not only the fertilizer, but the organic matter. So really, that's kind of a misnomer. Once the system, once you fire the biological system, in other words, you feed the life in the soil, they're activated, they're multiplying. When that engine gets working, it is a continuous engine. And that's really more of what we're, it's really about an ecosystem of life in the soil, a habitat that we're trying to, you know, support so that it can do its function in life, which is break organic matter down and cycle it back to Mother Nature.
How does this compare with us just composting on our own in our home garden?
Well, that's hugely important. You know that in San Francisco, it's illegal to put any organic material into your trash. They have a full separate system of picking up people's compost, and it's coming.
Yeah,
you know, it's good. We need it.
Very good. Lots of very progressive cities have been promoting that.
Yes, I think there's only two or three right now. I know New York is doing something. San Francisco,
Seattle,
and Seattle. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very progressive places. We're a progressive community. I'm sure this is coming, you know, to a neighborhood near us, and it should. But composting is vitally important to make. And you know, this is what Mr. Kellogg. Kathy's father said in the 1970s, it ought to be a crime to landfill organics. We cannot afford to throw our organic matter into the soil and have it go into the landfill when we need it back into the soil to feed the life in the soil. So it is important.
Now, our radio show has done a special one on composting because there are correct ways to compost as well as incorrect, and by just putting your banana peels, let's say, or apple cores into the soil, that is not what we're talking about.
We were at one time the largest thermophilic composting company in the world, which is heat composting, and then there's cold composting. So, you know,
worm composting,
mm-hmm. Right?
Vermiculture.
Yeah. Vermiculture, right. So, you know, if you have So here's the kind of some of the basics with compost. It's all about carbon to nitrogen, right? Woody brown material to green moist material.
Brown and greens.
Right. Carbon to nitrogen. That's what they typically call it. Brown and greens, right? Dry and moist. And this is what the Ag Department has stated. CDFA says you start with 30 to 40% carbon, dry matter, to 1% green matter, okay? And when it's cooked down, when it's finished, a finished compost means it's cooked down to about 12 to 1 to 10 to 1, okay? That's why that is so important, that when you see a product that says compost on it, and when you're buying it, that it is a true compost. It falls into that definition. So typically what people are challenged with is if it's too wet and it smells foul, you know it doesn't have enough air. If it's too dry and nothing's happening, you know it needs a little bit of moisture. So composting is a little bit of an art form. It really is. And it takes time for people to understand. But if you just get the ingredients proper, you get some of the moisture intact, you turn the pile once in a while, you'll start to know when that pile is cooking.
Yes, you know. You'll feel the heat.
Yep.
It needs air, it needs water, and it needs volume.
And the UC method of hot composting can be found online, mgorange.ucanr.edu. The pile should be 3 by 3 by 3 feet with approximately half brown and half green ratio. That might be a little bit easier to remember.
You know, once you get into the concept of composting and making it yourself, there's something pretty spectacular about making your own compost.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to share with you something Kathy Kellogg and the Kelloggs have been very instrumental with, is a group, an organization called Plant with Purpose. And we've been working with them. They're nonprofit. They are around the world, and they work with the poorest of the poor on this planet. And what they do is they actually teach people how to compost. How we adopted a village in Grand Coline, Haiti, and where they have completely denuded their forests, A, for cooking or building structures or for farming. Once you cut all these trees down and there's no roots holding the soil and there's no shade, all their soil has been depleted. It takes generations to revitalize. We have helped them decide what kind of trees do they plant, coffee, what's the understory plants that they plant, how do they compost, how do they start a nursery from seeds or cuttings, and how do they manage these plant communities so that they can lift themselves out of poverty. So composting is one of the things that Kathy went to a village in Africa and helped. We might think this is so basic in our world, but in other places on the planet, this is the difference between feeding your family and not feeding your family. So,
yes.
You know, we're so privileged here. I think we forget how privileged we are. And I love that the Kelloggs are so generous. We've done over 200 school gardens. So we do stuff locally and globally.
Wonderful.
You know, I have to say, this is one of the things that I admire. I've been at Kelloggs 18 years, and I love the Kelloggs. I mean, they are an extraordinary family, and it's the real deal. I mean, this is not just a marketing thing for us. This is about helping sustain our communities, helping grow and cultivate the next generation of gardeners. Because when technology came into play, a lot of the kids, they weren't out playing outside in the dirt. They were behind a screen, pushing buttons, playing their games. And gardening is part of, you know, cultivating you, who you are as a person, your soul.
Yeah, one of the exciting things about having you come onto the show when the UC Master Gardeners had Giselle speak to the UC Master Gardeners at the general meeting, you excited the audience by how the science is coming down to this level.
I you know, one of the other things that's new for us, and you'll start hearing about it, is this ingredient called biochar. It's basically charcoal used as a soil amendment. And this is another way that we are taking clean material. So we take some material from the lumber industry, the remnants. The lumber industry harvests the timber. We take all the remnants, the irregular pieces of wood, the outer portions that they can't make, you know, a 2x4 out of. We take the bark, the sawdust, and we put it in this oven that heats it at a high heat with low oxygen, and we put it back into the soil. And it really works to store carbon back into the soil. So I bring that up just to show you that there's another way that we take material. So that's lumber from the forest industry. We also have about 130 million dead standing trees in our forests. And that is fuel on the ground that burns fires hotter than they need to burn. We are harvesting some of that dead wood and putting it through this same process. They call it pyrolysis. They put it into this kiln, they burn it at a high heat. It's enclosed, so it's not off-gassing into the environment. And then we take that stabilized ash and charcoal and we put it back into the soil. This is happening all around the world right now. So this is another way of thinking about resource recovery. We only have a finite amount of resources on the planet. How do we get those materials either burn them, compost them, but how do we get them back into the soil?
What's the difference between a fertilizer and an amendment, let's say?
Okay, so an amendment would be made from things like wood fiber, right? We might use some peat moss. We might use some coconut coir, rice hulls or rice straw. We'll use manures. So that's the base. That's the fibrous material. That's our base material that we start with. Maybe some biochar, which is the wood burned as charcoal, right? And then maybe we would use manures, dairy, chicken. Maybe we'll use back guano, earthworm casting. So those are more manure-based. Maybe we'll use something plant-based, alfalfa meal, cottonseed meal, seaweed or kelp meal. Maybe we'll use animal byproducts, right? Blood meal, bone meal, fish bone meal. Maybe we'll use some minerals, dolomite lime, oyster shell lime, soft rock phosphate. So that's how we build a product, is fibrous material, nutrients, right? Whether it's animal manures, plant-based or mineral-based. How does a synthetic material get it? They might use some of the same fibers, base fibers, but many of them are really primarily using peat. We are trying to use and source materials that are byproducts of other industries. We do use some peat, but we're really trying to use other resources that are more sustainable.
Right, because those peat bogs are finite.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, really everything is, right? Everything on the planet. So how do we take those resources that are out there? I think this is a big piece of what we do as an industry that people don't understand. You know, there are only a number of finite resources. That's really how we build a product. So an amendment would be this organic material, this composted material or a planting mix or a soil conditioner that you're adding into the soil to open the soil up. If it's a hard pan clay soil, which most of us have, you know, that is a microscopic tiny particle. And we need to wedge those particles apart. We need to open the soil so it's breathable. Water percolates through. We have better soil structure. If it's a sandy, loose, DG type of soil, there we want to glue the particles together. So the first thing with the organic matter is to open up your soil. 2 inches over the top of the soil, you can either cultivate it in, or you can do more of a low-till or no-till type of gardening, which is becoming more of where we're going. Lay it on top of the soil and plant directly through it.
I know you've spoken before about if we look at our garden and some of the plants seem to be stalling.
Yes.
What your products can do.
So typically, if you walk out into the garden and a plant is just sitting there, 9 times out of 10, it means that you need to either lightly break the surface tension of that soil around it, because sometimes the soil will harden off. You know, it kind of gets a crust over the top, right? Sometimes just laying in a planting mix or a planting compost or some kind of an amendment over the top of the soil to open the soil up, to soften the soil so that it can actually receive the water that you're giving it, and the water makes it down to the root zone. And then adding some fertility at that same time. You can do that. So an amendment is more about opening the soil, getting the soil prepared for whatever you're going to plant. And the fertilizer is really the food that feeds the biology in the soil, feeds the microbes. It feeds both the biology and the plant at the same time.
Amendments are important, especially in our clay soil, to be able to absorb moisture better. With our clay soil, often the water might just sit there because it's not porous enough. But it's not necessary for, let's say, if we're planting succulents, cactus, or our native plants. And that's the beauty of native plants, correct?
Yeah, okay, so that category. So we do have a native planting mix, okay? And really, most of the culture around natives or Mediterranean plants is those plants are there because they have earned their place, right? They have to struggle. Their roots have to struggle through that hard pan clay soil, sort of like we have to struggle in life. You know, living is not for the faint of heart. So with those types of plants, you don't want to force growth, because that's the opposite of what they do. They grow slowly and steadily. If you use an organic amendment, which I still would, I just would use it at less than 50%. I would probably only use 20 to 25% for that initial planting. I might only use a starter fertilizer that is low numbers, right? If it's an even an alfalfa meal or even kelp meal, anything just in a very low, just to get it planted. And then the key with all three of those plants, the cactus, succulents, and Mediterranean or native plants, it's all about mulching. Okay. Now, let me take a step back from that. Kellogg has two different brands. We have the Kellogg brand and the Gardner and Bloom brand. Kellogg, you can find at all channels of trade. The Gardner and Bloom, you can only find at the mom and pop garden centers, the independent garden centers. So cactus and succulents need a very porous mix. And we have one in Kellogg and in Gardner and Bloom. And I love it. And it's a staple in my garden. I have a ton of containers, massive containers. And our cactus mix is one of the prominent things I use. A lot of pumice, a lot of sand, good drainage, has a little bit of organic matter, but not a lot. Because you don't want to hold a lot of new water, right, with those types of plants.
Yeah, I love cactus mix in anything I plant because it helps my clay soil become more
yes.
porous.
And people use our cactus mix. There's a lot of landscapers that use our cactus mix in the ground as an amendment.
Yes,
remember,
I do.
Yes, a lot of people
it's
are
very
doing
helpful.
That. Plumeria love our cactus mix. Palms love it. Citrus in pots.
I was thinking of the citrus.
Yeah, they love a cactus mix.
Oh, all our pots. Our potting
yes.
mix, along with potting mix.
So container gardening, you know, that is really another type of an art form. Now, even though we have potting soils, I would still add in some organic fertilizer right when you're mixing it in.
Yeah,
it's just good gardening practices.
What can you tell me about a complete versus an incomplete fertilizer?
Okay, so like the Paradise that I was telling you about, it's a 555. Typically, when you have nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and when you say it's a 555, that means that 5% of that bag and that ingredient is nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium. Something like, let's say, blood meal, which is a 1300 NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. So we know it only has nitrogen, right?
Right.
That would be considered an incomplete fertilizer.
Okay, good to know. So when you're checking those packages, when you go to buy your fertilizers, check those numbers.
That's right. An easy way to remember the numbers. So it's NPK. Those are primary nutrients. That's what plants use in the largest quantity. An easy way to remember those three numbers is up, up and down, all around.
Cute.
Okay. First number, nitrogen, vegetative growth. Middle number is both ends of the plant. First, a plant pushes roots, and then it's the other end of the plant, flowers and fruit. So it's really both ends of the plant. Third number is all around. So potassium, super important for disease resistance. You know, one of our liquids, it's called GBO. It's fish, molasses, and kelp. Molasses, rich in potassium, disease fighter. Seaweed extract or kelp meal, rich in potassium, disease fighter. Minimizes insect attack, disease attack. Can minimize powdery mildew, peach leaf curl, all the different things that we get because of the synthetic way of gardening. When you force feed plants, you create a plant with a thin cell structure, making it easier for insects and diseases to attack. We do the opposite. We grow healthy soil to grow plants with thicker cell structures.
We'll take a short station break to let you know that you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. This is In the Garden, a show produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. The subject today is Building Healthier Soil. And I'm DC Morgan, along with Ann Liu, and our guest today is Giselle Schoenegger, Manager of Organic Gardening Education for the Kellogg Company. Now let's return to our interview with Giselle. What about, can you tell us about liquid versus dry fertilizers
sure.
for the soil?
So we have different types of fertilizers. We have what I call a granulated meal. So like our single ingredient items, or we call those simples, like alfalfa meal, cottonseed meal, blood meal, bone meal, kelp meal. That's kind of like granola for the earth, if you will. Okay. Then we have a whole host of organic, blended granulated meals, from starter to all purpose, rose, acid, tomato, citrus. We have that whole gamut. Palma tropical. Those are also good for plumeria. Our bud and bloom booster. That's also great for any flowering plants. And then we have our new product, which is the Paradise, which is unique. It is they call it pan granulation. It's a pelletized, homogenized pellet that is it's all about ease of application. Okay. Love that product. Container gardening, raised beds, in ground, you name it. That's a great product for it. Okay. So those are all things that you can either put into the planting hole, or you can just toss around the top of the soil and water it in. But then we have liquids. We have a liquid fish molasses and kelp, but it is not to be confused with the fish emulsion. Fish emulsion is made at high heat. It's like pudding in a jar. It's also, because it's at high heat, it's like overcooking your vegetables. You lose all the vitamins, hormones, amino acids, enzymes, oils, and that's all healthy stuff for the plant and the life in the soil. So ours is a cold process. It's an enzyme process. So fish is protein, that's nitrogen. Molasses is sugar. It's also rich in potassium. The sugar is like fuel for the biology. It gives them energy. It makes them like sprinters, okay? So they can keep being active and doing the work that they're doing, breaking organic matter down. But remember, it's rich in potassium. And potassium is the third number, right? You have nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. It's always up, up and down, all around. So potassium is all around. Molasses is rich in potassium, which means it's a disease fighter. Kelp is the third ingredient. So it's fish, molasses, and kelp, or seaweed. Also rich in potassium, disease fighter. That's where we get all of our trace elements. So remember, plants need the sit-down meal, which is more of like the granulated meal or the pellet. They also need the liquid, especially in the active time of the year when plants are actively growing. That's when you want to transition to using liquids a little more often. 2 tablespoons per gallon, you can use it every time you water, or you can use it once a week. You might want to transition from that synthetic blue crystal that you use and transition over to a fish molasses and kelp. And again, you'll love it.
Yeah, again, going back to the natural things that are found out in the earth.
Yeah, that's right.
So do the needs change with the season in fertilizing?
Great question. Absolutely. So have you ever grown, let's just say in season, you've grown a tomato and you have nothing but a giant tomato plant and no fruit, right?
Right.
That means we use too much nitrogen. Okay. So that's like in season, right? We want to shift to a fertilizer that has a higher phosphorus content, like a tomato veg or a flowering fertilizer, right? So let's just say we get into the colder months. If we force growth in the same way that we did with that tomato in the cold time of year, and we use too much nitrogen, and we push that vegetative growth and we get a cold snap, or let's just say as we're coming out of winter, like into spring, you know, people get so excited. Now we're lucky. We have year-round gardening here, right? But in certain communities, you know, you gotta wait till they say Mother's Day, right? Or the end of May. Oftentimes people are just too excited. They want to get stuff in the ground and they start planting things too early. They start feeding things too early. And when you push growth, that's when you have the opportunity to have massive die-off if it's a cold spell. So we typically want to, during the active time of year is when you want to really do most of your fertilizing. And I would say in the colder time of year, you're better off just mulching that time of year.
And a rule of thumb also is, well, rather than a rule of thumb, we're talking about the temperature, not just in the air temperature. We're talking about the soil temperature.
Absolutely. Good point.
So in the cold season, we might have a warm snap. And we might run out and say, oh, it's time to fertilize. But it's not, because the soil remains cold.
So that's an excellent point. So one of the things that I want to mention about raised beds, the reason we are doing raised beds today is so that we don't have to deal with our hard pan soil, right? So we have this fantastic product. It's called Raised Bed Planting Mix. Kellogg has one. Gardner and Bloom has one. And that is a great material to add as your base. The reason I'm bringing that up is raised beds heat up faster than our native soil. Clay has a tendency to stay cold longer. So even though the ambient air temperature might be warm, the soil temperature stays cold for a long period of time. And so when you mulch, mulch is like a thermal blanket. It's like an insulator on the soil. It's like a forest floor. That keeps the roots warm in the summertime, cool in the wintertime, cool in the summertime, warm in the wintertime, and protects the soil. So again, we're spoiled in our climate here. My rule of thumb is if it looks hungry and it needs to be fed, I feed it because I can get away with it here. I think our greatest challenge today is really about getting the organic matter back into the soil. If we are feeding our gardens with synthetics, it is like putting that plant on an artificial IV. There's nothing sustainable about that approach alone. You have to be willing, you know, it's still the cheapest thing in the garden center is our amendments. I mean, that is really the cheapest thing you can buy in the garden center. And it's really the most important. People have a love affair with plants, but they don't always give it the habitat and the food that it needs to sustain it.
Good point.
Yeah.
It does help to look for that OMRI symbol.
It does.
On the bag.
It does. It really does. And I'm very proud of what we're doing. We have wonderful staff and people that just care about making a difference. So, I'm very proud of the Master Gardeners. You have a great role in our communities. I've spoken to thousands of Master Gardeners over my 23-year career, and it's been a privilege.
And we're proud to say that we have a Master Gardener group in every state.
Yes, very exciting. Mm-hmm, it's
that
very
is exciting. And as having that bridge with companies such as yours that work alongside with some of the newest science-based research from our cooperative extension, it works hand in hand.
It does. It really does. And I thank you so much for having me today. I think we're doing good work, the work is constantly evolving.
I think we also need to be thoughtful about the beneficial insects in our gardens. And a lot of pesticides are being used too frequently, too much, and we're killing off the beneficial insects, which help to naturally keep the garden in check. So what can you tell us about your products for that?
Well, we purchased a company about 4 or 5 years ago called Orcon, and we actually do beneficial insects as well. So we have a whole division that is all about, you know, green lacewings, ladybugs. Actually, green lacewings are much more voracious than ladybugs, but we have this love affair with ladybugs. That's really why. But green lacewings are much more effective, eat way more insects than the ladybugs do. And we have beneficial nematodes. We sell the live worms. So we have that whole category, okay? But as an insect spray, one of the products in a company we bought about the same time, but these were all small companies that just kind of complemented what we did. There's a product called Organicide. It's Organocide, and it's called Organicide Be Safe 3-in-1. And that name should tell you that it's Be Safe, and it is. So what I love about this product, it's a fungicide, miticide, insecticide. It's an oil. It smothers the insect. It smothers the fungal spores or any of the bacterial spores. And then it leaves a film over the leaf surface so the females will not lay her eggs on it. The active ingredient is sesame oil, and fish oil is also part of it. But that fragrance dissipates really quickly. The key is it's certified organic. It is effective. You can use it right up until the day of harvest, and it's safe on the honeybees and on beneficial insects. That is huge for us. This company that we purchased was from Florida, used extensively in the agricultural community. You can find it in many, many places. It's a concentrate, and I just think it's a fantastic product. So that's what I would think about for a consumer is how do we minimize our impact? Because what we do in our garden impacts the greater garden, right?
Right. Yeah. We want to keep those bees. That's for all of our foods and for pollinating and even for the clothes we wear.
Absolutely. You talk about pollinating. I was just in Texas and they talk about the importance of pollinators to soil and water conservation. And it says, when somebody brings up the birds and bees, the first thing that comes to mind is probably not soil and water conservation, right? But perhaps it should be, as these little creatures play a considerable role in sustaining healthy ecosystems. The birds, bees, butterflies, bats, beetles, moths, and even small mammals are the pollinators, which are vital for ag, our food, and the preservation of our natural resources. I mean, it's really true. We don't think about these organisms in life. And really, they're the reason we're here. Without them, we don't exist. So soil health is important. Air quality, water quality, all the life in the soil is vital.
All interconnected.
Yep, that's right. So just to finish on that. So according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, up to 80% of all plant species are pollinated. And 3/4 of all the world's most common food crops require insect pollination. So they say that one out of every 3 bites of food we eat exists because of the pollinators.
Amazing. Going back to healthy soils, I know mycorrhizae was a new word in my vocabulary until about 2 years ago. And some of the classes we were taking, they were talking about how the French had the secret to the soil in that mycorrhizae. And that's why everyone raves about their fruits and vegetables.
You know, so mycorrhizal fungi has been on the planet for 460 million years, supporting plants by attaching to their root. And actually, it's symbiotic. The root is secreting sugars or exudates, you know, proteins and carbohydrates and sugars, feeding that fungal attachment. And then the fungal attachment or the hyphae or the mycelial fans or the fungal fans, they expand that root system and make the root system anywhere from 10 to 100 to 1,000 times larger surface area, allowing the plant to have more access to water and nutrients. So they sustain each other. And they're also, you know, it's the life in the soil, the bacteria, as well as the mycorrhizal fungi, that secrete these powerful glues, and they are the ones that are responsible for making good soil structure. If you have good soil structure, the water percolates through the soil, the biology breathes, the whole system works. So both are fundamentally important. In a woodier environment, that's where you'll have a lot more mycorrhizal colonies. They really go after the wood. If you've ever opened a bag of our products and you ever see this fungal white growth on it, if it's white or yellow or a touch of a little bit of orange or red, that is a beneficial. That is there breaking the wood down. If you see that when you open a bag, typically you'll see it's white. You just fluff that back into the bag, and that is part of the natural cycle of wood being broken down.
Good to know. Don't freak out. Just mix it back in.
That's right. Yeah, but mycorrhizae is an easy way to remember the word. And I hope I don't insult any Irishmen. But think of it as an Irishman. Mike O'Reilly is a fun guy. And that is inoculated in all of our fertilizers blended. Our lawn fertilizer. Gosh, if you still have a lawn out there, please transition to organics. You know, if you have to bring the big guns out, once you bring them out, your next feed, make it organic. You know, if you're going to do some of the toxic things because you feel like you need to solve a problem, do it. But then, you know, come back to your organic practice. Always try to use the least toxic stuff first, but then come back to the middle. Always think about what you're using. It's so important for your health and the health of your kids. I mean, we all hear this, you know, on a daily basis, that it does make a difference what we use in the garden.
And that's all part of that resource recovery that you've been promoting. It's important to help our planet recover from some of the destruction we've made just in the last 100 years.
Oh, it's true. I mean, we've done more damage in 100 years. you know, then, I mean, unless we all get on board, there's a fantastic book called Kiss the Ground that Kathy Kalla gave to all of us. And it is one of the, I love books. I read a lot. My mom's always telling me, can't you read a romance novel once in a while instead of all these biology books? This book brings it all together. Kiss the Ground. It just came out this year. And that's a Rumi quote. And it is an extraordinarily powerful book. If any of you are interested in really knowing about the whole fertilizer industry, soil health, kind of where the future is going, because organic matter is right now, it is one of our lowest inputs into the soil. We are starving for organic matter to be put back into the soil. And that's what Kellogg's is all about, is how do we take resources and that are clean, that are approved for organic production, how do we compost those and get those back into the soil? So we're doing some really good work, I have to say. And I'm very excited about some of the new things that we're doing with the biochar, our liquid fertilizers that are not an emulsion, our paradise, which is the granulated meal. I think our beneficial insect program is fantastic. We kind of cover the whole gamut, but there's always room for learning more things. And that's really what we're all about.
Did we talk about what the difference is between dry and liquid fertilizer?
I think we did. Just to sum it up, the granulated goes in the planting hole and around the base. And think of that as, you know, your smorgasbord of nutrients, right? The plant can break a morsel down over here, but there's still a pantry of food available in the soil. So those organisms are going to constantly cycle it down. And it lasts a good 2.5 months in the soil. The liquid is your supplement. That's your, you know, that's what you want to use when you're starting your seedlings, when you want to push plants to grow in the active time of year. You can also do a foliar feed with liquid. So if you use our foliar feed on your fruit trees, on your roses, you will diminish powdery mildew on roses. You will diminish peach leaf curl on your fruit trees. And why? It's from the potassium from the molasses and the potassium from the seaweed. Fantastic product. It's available in a pint, a quart, a gallon, and a 5-gallon. Not everybody carries all those sizes, but I love our liquid. We took it from the ag community. So a lot of the things, a lot of our biological package, it's from the agricultural community. So this is, you know, this is really kind of from agriculture to your backyard.
Wondering, is it true that mature trees and shrubs may need little to no fertilizer?
I would say that, again, let the garden tell you. Because you may have a windrow of trees or shrubs, right? And maybe half of them look really good because the drainage is good. Or maybe there's a slope there. Or maybe the irrigation that you have isn't covering parts of the trees. So you want to look and let the tree tell you. But I would say feeding your trees, you know, even your mature trees 2 or 3 times in a year, but mulching them, that's really more important, is getting the mulch around your trees. That's what's going to sustain your trees. But you always want to remember to not put mulch all the way to the trunk of the tree. Leave about 4 to 6 inches. And you want to go all the way to the drip line, even though that's not where the roots don't stop there. If you have the room to go 4 feet past the drip line, like where the leaves are, that's ideal. But sometimes you just don't have that option. So yes, I would say that your trees and shrubs, if you feed them 2 to 3 times in the year and you're mulching, that's beneficial for plant life.
And we, like you said, we don't want root rot, so no mulching to the tree trunk.
Right.
And the canopy, look at the canopy of the tree to determine your drip line.
Yes.
So the drip line and a few feet out is a good place to add the fertilizers, because that's where the roots are that
yes.
will absorb the food.
Right. And I mean, plus trees, you know, they have these root structures and many of them have mycorrhizal colonies. You know, they're really saying, to kind of go back to the mycorrhizae, I missed this part. You know, they called that the original World Wide Web, because there is this communication that happens. And they're really beginning to realize that, like, if we were all plants and under the soil, I mean, this relates to the question on mycorrhizae as well as trees, we would have these interconnected colonies of mycorrhizae. And if there was a pathogen or something coming to infect us, the mycorrhizae and the plants would send compounds out into the soil to stop that pathogen from trying to come into our colony.
Amazing.
It is amazing. So trees are foraging and mining mineral nutrients out of the soil. They have access to a lot of food that's in that garden soil. And so I would say not a lot of food, but let the garden tell you.
Now, what are some signs that a plant or a tree, maybe start with plants, are lacking nutrients?
Well, if something is yellow or chlorotic, you know that that's lacking some nitrogen, right? So that's one way. If a plant just kind of, if it gets brown spots, you know that either it's over or under watering. That's another thing that you might see. If you see, you know, the new growth versus the old growth, that gives you a signal that there's something going on. Really just the overall, there's such a difference in the plant personality of a plant that's been fertilized organically and one that's been fertilized synthetically. The synthetic one is force-fed. The internodes are elongated and stretched. The leaf surface is thin. The plant is a little more spindly, right? It may be larger in mass, but it's weaker in structure. The organic plant, the internodes are tight. The cell structure and the stems are thick. The foliage is thick. It's shiny. The flowering is more prolific. So, you know, those are two things that you can see in containers. So I would just say that, you know, if a plant just looks weak, the color's not strong, you're not getting flowering, because if you don't have a good flower set, you're not going to have a good bud set. You know, maybe the plant needs to be pruned. There could be some selective pruning that needs to happen so the plant can be revitalized again. I would say those are some ways of looking at plant growth to see where there might be a deficiency. If it's overconsumptive, you know, where it's getting too much nitrogen, you can also see that as well. You know, it's like the plant is overgrown.
Well, what are some other points you'd like our audience to remember?
Well, I think, you know, checking out our website, we have great videos. We did some videos actually with Village Nursery here in town, and they, with Nicholas Stadden and I, we did some, he's just charming. I think he came out and spoke to you guys as well. He's really a plant master. But Village has been a partner of ours for many, many years, as many, many accounts are in the area. We have fabulous customers. So our website is great. Videos, articles. I would say check out, look for biochar and start learning a little bit about biochar. That's another way that we're taking, and this is happening worldwide. This is not just happening here. We're really kind of on the cutting edge of science-based, you know, of agriculture and growing. That's really what our focus is. I would say that the importance of the beneficial insects, more and more people are getting into that. Composting is huge. I would say, you know, no good organic matter should go into your trash can. I think that's really the key.
Really important.
Yeah, I think that's really the key to understand. You know, and if you think about it, like in our neighborhoods, we have now the municipalities are composting, right? They take our green waste, they take it to a facility, they compost it. But we don't know what the neighbor's using on
that's
their
right.
lawn. And really, I think that's really the thing you need to start asking yourself is, how do we source materials that are clean and safe for our garden? And that's really where we come in. We do a great job with that. And I just want to thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you today.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed this interview.
We learned so much today. It's been great.
I think some key things to remember about your visit here is to build our soil, make it healthy, avoid synthetics, be more mindful of using organics, because this helps to recover our soil.
Absolutely.
That has been long destroyed.
I think it's really about restorative and regenerative practices today. How do we restore what we've taken out? How do we create a healthy environment for ourselves and our children and our families and our gardens?
Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much, Giselle. And we hope to hear more from you soon.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, this has been In the Garden with the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I've been hosting with Ann Liu. My name is DC Morgan. And we thank you for joining us today. If you want to go to our website,
mgorange.ucanr.edu. Again, our website is mgorange.ucanr.edu. Giselle's website for Kellogg's is kelloggarden.com. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week to listen to another In the Garden show, Thursdays 8:30 to 9:30. This is 88.9 FM in Irvine. Stay tuned for another public affairs show. Thank you for listening.